You are listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 Bradenton. The views, comments, and opinions that come from our interviews, shows, air personalities, and from our calling guests are uncensored, and those views and opinions can be widespread and extremely diverse. These opinions or views do not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of WSLR, Fogartyville, our staff, or volunteers. Get up, stand up.
Stand up for your life. Hello, Suncoast. Welcome back for an extremely special episode of The Ruthless Truth. But first, very quickly, as usual, we got to get into our true update. Last Saturday, Tampa showed up and showed out for the People's Pride March held by the People's Pride Coalition, marching the streets of Ybor City to demand clear liberation, take pride back to its anti-capitalist and anti-police roots. This is a coalition of many different organizations in the Tampa Bay area that are dedicated to reclaiming pride for the people and taking it back to its roots. This march was held specifically because Tampa Pride, in its cowardice, canceled their march this year because of, quote, political and economic pressures. Now, we are not afraid. Queer people of Tampa Bay are not afraid. We are going to be here every single year. And the People's Pride Coalition is really focusing Pride on what it's truly meant to be about. It was a great show for the People's Pride Coalition. This is their first march of this kind, and the response was incredible. Of course, given everything that's been happening with U.S. imperialism around the world, there was a specific focus on ending the U.S. war machine, because we know when America drops bombs on Iran, drops bombs on countries around the world, they are dropping bombs on queer people as well. So it is our business. Unfortunately, I do bring extremely somber news. This Tuesday morning, SWAT officers shot and killed a man in Bradenton, right here. Now, this man they broke into his house. They claimed that they needed a SWAT team because a felon could be living in that house. Oh, so scary. Now, they broke in. They pointed their guns at a man who was sitting down. They gave him seconds to respond before shooting and killing him. But the thing is, this man, Tyrone Bell, was disabled. He was partially paralyzed. He was unable to get up and answer their demands like they wanted to. And this is a 56-year-old man, and they murdered him. They murdered him in cold blood. So be on high alert for local events and actions happening in our community to fight back against these killer cops. When asked, the police said that person was given commands and they did not respond to those commands. And one of our SWAT officers fired at least 3 shots, hitting the person, which is a very cold and detached way to say that the disabled man couldn't stand up fast enough, so they killed him. We know that these are killer cops. And this reminder, this was for a drug warrant. A drug warrant. As if any amount of activity related to drugs is deserving of the loss of a human life. A quote from the brother of the murdered man, Willie Bell, says, "Even though they were serving a drug warrant, take him to jail. I'd rather him be in jail than be here lying on that cold floor, never being able to speak to him again." He also says, "I mean, no matter what he was doing, and I don't justify what he was doing, there's still such a thing as due process. This is America. He never got that chance." And of course, the police have been nothing but dismissive about this case. And this is going to be something that the community has to push for justice on. This was cold-blooded murder. And we will need, so I encourage all of our listeners to keep your eyes on the horizon for future actions regarding this in your community. All right, Suncoast, welcome back. We have a very exciting episode of The Ruthless Truth. I'm joined with my co-host, Leo.
Hello, Ira. Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's great to be on this side of the show and not on the editing side, but I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. We knew we had to have you on for this very special episode because we have two very important guests today. We have, from the, you know, Cuban consulate, we have Adrian and David. Please take a moment to introduce yourself, guys.
Hello, this is David Ramirez. I am the second secretary and cultural attaché of the Cuban embassy in Washington, D.C. Very nice to meet you.
So, hello, Adrian, second secretary too of the Cuban embassy in Washington, D.C., dealing with sports and solidarity movements in the U.S.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited for this episode today. We have a lot to discuss, especially with everything that's going on right now. Leo, real quick, will you catch our listeners up on what's going on right now in Cuba?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Ira. So we are having this very urgent episode because 48 days ago, the U.S. government declared Cuba an unusual and extraordinary threat. And I want to put that in very heavy quotation marks, which was followed by a complete oil blockade of the island. And I want to tell our listeners very clearly, Cuba is not a threat to anyone. Cuba is a sovereign nation that decided to adopt a different political and economic model, a model that puts the people before the profits. And I want to ask you a few questions to our listeners. How can Cuba provide healthcare under sanctions? How can Cuba provide housing for its people under sanctions? How can Cuba educate their people for free under sanctions? With the stroke of a pen, the United States decided that no country is allowed to trade or send oil to the island, causing 11 million Cubans to go through one of the worst humanitarian crises in their history. And we're going to discuss today the conditions in Cuba, what they're facing on the ground, as well as the political consequences and causes of this blockade and embargo. So I want to get us started with the first question. I want our listeners to know what the living conditions in Cuba are right now after weeks of an illegal oil blockade. What are the problems Cubans are facing and how are their everyday lives affected?
Yes. Thank you very much, Leo, for your introduction. And it is a great question that you just asked. Yeah, the situation on the ground is very difficult right now. People are going through a very tough situation. In less than 3 months, our government and our society has had to readjust to a new reality, a reality as much as we might like it or not. Modern day societies, contemporary societies need to work with fuel. And when there is an active blockade of fuel from the most powerful country in the world militarily against a small island nation, obviously it will have an effect on our society, on our economy, on our way of living, on our demographics. So the situation, to summarize, is very difficult. People are dealing with long, very long blackouts each and every day. Before, we used to talk about long lines to get fuel. Now there are no lines to get fuel because there is basically no fuel to be provided. The government has been forced to fraction and ration specific allocation of fuel to very basic services in hospitals for emergency issues, emergency operations. Universities have been forced to shut down. Public transportation has almost gone to zero. So definitely the situation is very hard. I don't know if you read a few hours ago, there was a massive collapse of the national grid. So it is a direct result of the scarcities of fuel and the impossibility of the national grid to keep up with the national connection.
Yes, we are following the situation closely with the national blackout that happened a few hours ago. I want to ask the next question, right, because this is not the first time that the Cuban people are tested like this. After the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, Cubans lost their main economic power overnight, their main economic partner, and they went through a crisis that was called the special period. And we as Cubans, you know, we use the word inventing a lot instead of doing. And I think that came out of that period because people had to come up with very smart solutions to everyday problems to be able to live their lives, right? So I want to ask, how are Cubans trying to overcome this current blockade, this current period? And how is it different from the special period in 1991?
Okay, so... that's a great question. Our government is taking many measures in order to overcome this crisis, in order to make the most vulnerable people safe, in order to maintain the basic services to the population. So one of the measures is like making a new distribution of the oil that is used. So it's using main for hospitals, maternity homes. For example, some schools are going virtual. Some workplaces are working from homes in order to don't use energy in the institutions. They are using, for example, electric vehicles in order to move doctors and to move patients who need dialysis and some very urgent treatments. So they are trying to use the few oil that we have in Cuba. For example, we are producing almost 40% that we need. So we are using our own oil. Even if this is not enough, it's something that we are using in order to maintain the basic services. We are also investing a lot in solar energy. So we are trying to make a renovation of our electrical generation power in the whole country, but it's a long process. It's not something that you can make from one day to another. So we are investing in that. And we are trying to solve the situation with specific measures. It's different than the special period in many ways. First of all, a special period came because we, as you say, we lost our main economic and business partner in that period. But we were able to make some economic change right away in order to diversify our partners, our economy. This crisis is handmade, is created because of the willing of the United States government to strain our economy even more. And it came after 60 years of a blockade, came after 60 years of don't having resources to maintain our electrical power, electrical plants, don't have the resources to maintain our hospital in good conditions. It came in a very hard situation. It also came after COVID-19 effects and after the first mandate of Trump and the first mandate of Biden, who was almost the same. So our economy was really a bad situation when these measures were taken.
Yeah, thank you for that. Yes, we cannot underestimate the impact that COVID had on the island. That is, depends a lot on tourism. And I want to ask a question because, I say this a lot. I think Cuba's greatest resource is nothing material, is not tobacco. It's not its cane, sugar, you know, it's nickel, but it is actually its people, and specifically its doctors. And Cuban exports doctors to underdeveloped countries as a show of international solidarity. And these Cuban doctors are very well regarded in the global South, where they are critical in rural areas that have no medical then they have no healthcare at all. However, as part of this U.S. campaign against Cuba, their medical missions are being targeted. So I want to ask you, could you explain why Cuba does these medical missions abroad and how is the U.S. Trying to recently undermine them?
Well, thank you for your question, Leo. Yes, Cuba, I mean, why do we do this abroad? Why do we do international solidarity? Because it's the essence of our existence. I mean, if you don't do solidarity with the people, you cannot have a working, a functional socialist system. That is the essence of how we operate as a nation. We practice solidarity with our people, but we also practice solidarity and friendship with the rest of the people around the world. Whomever is open to receive our friendship, whoever is open to receive our helping hand, we will be there to give it. Our country has for many decades practiced this. For many years, we were part of the independence liberation efforts against colonialism in Africa many decades ago. And afterwards, we developed a very robust healthcare system with the highest number per capita of doctors around the world. And obviously it was just a matter of time to start sharing what we had with the rest of the world. We have dozens of thousands of medical volunteers, because this is a word that is not usually used. We have volunteers. These people are not doctors against their own will in other countries. They volunteer to practice what they learned, what they studied, what they work in Cuba, in the farthest and harshest corners and most inhospitable corners around the world. You will see Cuban doctors saving lives in Haiti. You will see Cuban doctors saving lives in the most underserved communities in Africa, in South America, in Asia, and even in Europe. It is our essence of being. In the last few years, the United States has, let's just say, has ramped up the pressure against sovereign nations, friendly nations that for many years have had medical cooperation with Cuba. In the past few weeks, you've seen on the headlines that countries like Honduras, Guatemala, Jamaica have canceled their programs, their medical programs with Cuba, which is a direct effect of all the pressure that is being put upon them. We have to also remember that the Helms-Burton Act, which is the bill that codified the blockade against the Cuban people in 1996, one of its main titles basically pushes the State Department to do active campaigns in third parties, in third states, to try to stop those countries from cooperating with Cuba, from basically having a friendly relationship with the Cuban people and with the Cuban government. So unfortunately, many of these countries are losing the opportunity and the possibility of having doctors saving lives. I mean, the doctors that were in Honduras, you know, operated people that were factually blind in places like Jamaica. I don't know if I'm getting this data incorrect or wrong, but somewhere I read that 70% of the medical procedures that had been done there were done by Cuban doctors. So we're talking about real raw data that exemplifies how important our brigades are and needed, how our brigades are in places like this. But at the same time, you know, we still have, you know, thousands of doctors around the world still working 100% of their time in other countries and helping out. And we are very happy about that. And for us, it's a great honor to be sharing our knowledge of saving lives with other people.
Yes. Now, my comrade Leo talked about the resilience of the Cuban people. But what is the outlook from the Cuban government? President Díaz-Canel has said that there have been talks with the U.S., which has led to all sorts of jumping to conclusions and speculations on what those talks entail and what and whether or not, you know, Cuban sovereignty is at stake. Should you tell us how concerned should people be for the future of the Cuban revolution?
So, yes, thank you for the question. Our president, he made a public press briefing Saturday morning or Friday morning, if I'm not mistaken. And he was very clear. Our sovereignty and our independence and our condition of a sovereign and independent nation is not in question. It's not being discussed. It's not being threatened. In Cuba, we have had a red line for many centuries already, and the red line is our sovereignty. I don't consider that there is much more to say regarding this question. You have to be very careful with, you know, unfortunately, there's going to be a lot of propaganda, a lot of misinformation, a lot of fake news coming out regarding what you were mentioning. But we have to be very clear. We have been here for many years, and we are going to be here for a long haul, and we are not going to be pressured into making decisions that are against the interests of the Cuban people. So sovereignty is not under discussion.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that response, because like you said, there's been so much fake news going around. So glad you can bring our listeners a firm clarity on that. Now, we know that Cuba is not alone. Cuba inspires so much love and solidarity from the world over. You know, it was Black History Month recently, and we talked about how I always say on this show, our listeners will hear me say all the time, that Cuba has done more for Black liberation than any country on the face of this earth. And that solidarity and that love always comes back. So we know that next week, actually, hundreds of people in various solidarity groups are going to be heading to Cuba to help deliver aid, medical supplies, solar panels for hospitals. Now, why do you think so many people feel called to support Cuba in its time of need?
Okay, thanks for this question. We have seen many demonstrations of solidarity in these times with our country, with our people. And that's just something that shows how people feel about Cuba, how people feel about this specific situation where our country is under very hard economic pressure in order to obtain goals from other countries. As our Minister of Health said in a statement, solidarity in this moment with Cuba is not about ideologically, it's not about political issues, it's mainly about human basis feelings, it's about humanity. Our country is facing a hard situation, and it has been solidarity with many countries wherever is needed. Something that you can be sure is, it doesn't matter the situation is our country, it doesn't matter if we have facing hard situation, we will be in solidarity with any country that needs us. So we have now seen those countries showing their solidarity with us. We only have gratitude with them. The thing is that that's something that it came with as a consequence of the basis of the Cuban Revolution that has been supporting many countries around their long history.
Beautiful. Yes, thank you. Thank you so much for that. A lot of our listeners are in support, and you know they can't be making them the trip to Cuba themselves. I'll be going next week. But for people who want to support the Cuban people, for people who are, you know, they stand against the attacks that are happening against Cuba, how can they show their solidarity with the Cuban people, especially, you know, Americans, especially Floridians who are going to be our listeners?
Yes, thank you for your question. Obviously, we just wanted to say that it has been, you know, we have been very grateful, and it's a great opportunity to participate in your great podcast, and you know, having you give us the possibility of talking to the people in Florida, you know, or in South Florida specifically, is very important for us. Our main message is that, you know, us as diplomats here, it's not our place to tell you what, you know, what you can do, what you cannot do regarding Cuba. What we can tell you is what people do here in the United States on a daily basis to help the people of Cuba. Right now, there are donation drives happening in regards to Cuba. There is a big group of people traveling in the next few days. There are people raising funds to buy solar panels for hospitals and for schools. There are people raising funds to buy medicines for the people in clinics, in polyclinics and in hospitals in Cuba. And there are people doing a lot of political advocacy, knocking on doors, talking to their representatives, to the legislators, and sending letters, putting out the calls. And we consider that it's highly important, and we are very happy to have learned that there is a growing number of Cuban Americans and Cubans that live here in the United States that are increasingly speaking out against this inhumane policy, its cruel policy against the people of Cuba. And we are very glad to see that many of them are being brave enough in an unfortunate, very hostile political environment sometimes, and speaking out against this cruel policy against the people of Cuba. And the main message is that, you know, don't fall for the propaganda machine, which is very well funded. Do not fall for the lies that is being spewed about our country. Our government is doing more than it's capable of doing just to have the lights on some hours around the day. And we will keep on, you know, working and striving and struggling to have our society intact. Hopefully in the near future, things will get better. And you've been seeing that we are, you know, setting up solar panels and solar parks that are capable of generating a whole lot of electricity for the countries. Don't think that, you know, we are crossed in arms and that we are not doing anything. We are working very hard to get out of this situation. And we don't have, you know, just to make this clear, we don't have any expectations from other countries, from any other people. We are certain that if we're going to get out of this problem, it's going to be on our own and by ourselves.
All right. Well, this has been an absolutely wonderful episode of The Ruthless Truth. We are so grateful to have you guys on and give your insights. But that is our time for the show. So I just want to take another moment to thank you guys for being on and just express my love and gratitude and solidarity.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. You're great.
All right. Now that was an incredible interview, but now it is time for our next in neighborhood. Tampa United against Trump, Saturday, March 28th, 2 p.m., Tampa City Hall. Be there or be square. The Tampa Coalition Against the Trump Agenda calls on the people and organizations of Tampa to unite with us this upcoming No Kings Day, where they will show Trump that Tampa will not tolerate any of his attacks. The more Trump and his lackeys try to repress the movement, the stronger it'll become. ICE out of Tampa, legalization for all. Also, this Saturday, March 21st, from 2 to 3 p.m. at Allendale Church in the Wesley Room, there will be a Women's History Month event. Join us in honoring Women's History Month with a powerful discussion on women's dignity in a patriarchal and capitalist society, the fight to abolish the commodification of women's bodies, and how quality of life could be transformed under socialism. Also, very important for all our listeners, there is still a call for artists. It's not too late to join. They are inviting local artists to be a part of this conversation, to showcase their art at our events. Works in 2D, 3D, spoken word, music are all accepted. And the selected artists are responsible for displaying their work. So make sure you bring your easel, stands, anything to prepare. You can find links in the Ruthless Truth Instagram to see where to submit.
This is Stephanie Wells, Executive Director of Pacifica Foundation. Congress has defunded public media, threatening the survival of television and radio stations that provide trusted news, emergency alerts, and vital community connection. Years of corporate media consolidation and deregulation have taken media out of community hands, while social media platforms cut back on fact-checking, leaving communities vulnerable to misinformation. In this time of social crisis and climate emergencies, local stations provide vital information for keeping our community safe. You can help by supporting and donating to your local community media. This message comes to you in solidarity from the Pacifica Foundation.
Have you ever loved a woman? They call it Stormy Monday. It's all my fault, I myself done somebody wrong.
Hey, I'm Andy Franklin.
Oh, yeah.
On the next Backbeat, the blues roots of two great albums, Eric Clapton's Layla and the Allman Brothers at Fillmore East, recorded just months apart 55 years ago. The music behind the music on the Backbeat, Wednesday evening at 7, right here on WSLR.
Wake up, mama. Turn your lamp down low.
WSLR is supported by Building Bridges Coffee House at Manatee Unitarian Universalist Fellowship in downtown Bradenton, offering monthly concerts by artists like In Good Company, Friday, March 20th, performing Acoustic Americana. Details at manateeuuf.org.
Volunteers are an essential part of what we do at WSLR in Fogartyville. The voices you hear hosting local shows on WSLR are volunteers. The people greeting and seating you at Fogartyville events are volunteers. You can serve on one of our committees, assist in the office, or be a part of our news team. The volunteer application is available on our website, WSLR.org, under the support tab, or give us a call in the office at 941-894-6469 to learn more.
Support from WSLR comes from the Suwannee Spring Reunion. The Suwannee Spring Reunion takes place March 20th through 23rd at the Spirit of Suwannee Music Park in Live Oak, Florida. The four-day festival features roots, folk, bluegrass, and Americana music, along with workshops and community gatherings. More information is available at SuwanneeSpringReunion.com.
Fogartyville presents Chloe Kimes on Thursday, March 19th. Doors open at 6 p.m., show at 7 p.m. Chloe Blimes blends indie folk and Americana with emotionally driven songwriting, expressive vocals, and a modern roots sound shaped by personal storytelling and touring experience. Tickets are $22 for members, $27 for not yet members, and $13 for students. That's Chloe Kimes, Thursday, March 19th at Fogartyville. More information is available at WSLR.org or by phone at 941-894-6469.
Chamber Orchestra of Sarasota concludes its ninth season with Four Seasons Mashup on March 26th at 7:30 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church of Sarasota, 2050 Oak Street. The program features violinist Ilana Niederlander performing Vivaldi's Spring and Summer from the Four Seasons, Astor Piazzolla's Summer in Buenos Aires, and Mark O'Connor's Fall from the American Seasons. The program concludes with Peter Boyer's Three Olympians, Apollo, Aphrodite, Ares, for string orchestra. Robert Vodnoy is the music director. More information available at